Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today I want to talk about Obamacare because it's been off of the radar for a while with the selection cycle that's running through. It's almost like I won't go there. Anyway, Obamacare is unfolding exactly the way those of us who were against it from the beginning have been warning everybody about. There's an article that just came out on the 18th from the Free Beacon stating that the healthcare spending is projected to account for 1/5 of the economy by 2025. Remember we talked about the Affordable Care Act becoming a single payer system and moving to be controlled by the government as a way of controlling 1/6 of the economy? Well, here we are. We're moving exactly that way. They can't even control the cost. So when they tell you that it's becoming cheaper, that it is efficient, that if you centralize the healthcare choices, then everything is going to be hunky-dory. They're talking about spending $10,000 per person in the country for healthcare. Well, that $10,000, let me tell you, is not going to the doctor. A majority of that's going to the insurance companies, the hospitals, the pharmaceutical industry. And, you know, unfortunately, we're getting sicker. We're not getting more healthy. The cancer rate's gone through the roof. Autism rate is out of control. People, the expected life expectancy has gone down in certain groups among us, and it's not working. And all of this manipulation, central planning, social engineering applied to the health system is a disaster. If you want to think about it in terms of health, if you want to think about it in terms of control, it is right on track to become a single-payer, government-mandated system that strips you of your personal freedom to choose the doctor that you want, the treatment options that you want, the medications that you want, especially if they're not pharmaceutical driven, the ability to have informed consent as opposed to somebody shoving a vaccine on you 24/7. I mean, this is just, you wonder, I mean, I've said it before, it's a medical industrial complex. And there is no voice except for the physician, and I mean the independent physician, who's out there on the front line trying to take care of their patient. This has gotten to such a point that in Vermont, the doctors there are fighting because there is a mandate for physicians to talk about end-of-life decisions, including physician-assisted suicide. And if they have a moral objection to that, it's just like the gag rule with abortion, where doctors were in the past not allowed to speak about abortion as a choice. Anti-abortion choices, you know, adoption, etc., as a choice, because that was you were gagged by the government. Well, here's the same thing in the reverse. So if you don't want to talk to your patient about an end-of-life decision, including physician-assisted suicide, you can't say that you don't want to talk about that. You have to send that patient to a physician who will. I mean, there's an issue with the Hippocratic Oath here, that you are forced in that state, and they're working against it, to work against the Hippocratic Oath under penalty. This is not a physician-driven system. It is a corporatist and government-based medical system where they force you to buy something you don't want. They force you, once you're in it, to use the options that they deem necessary or important or cost-effective. And then when it's your time to actually use it because you have something catastrophic, they're going to start talking to you about palliative care, but not only that, physician-assisted suicide. So why don't you just off yourself? Make it cheaper for your family. Don't let them, you know, go struggle financially. And of course, it plays on the weak part or the weakest part of a person who's at life's end. You don't want to cause your family any kind of distress. You know, you want to leave them something better than, you know, what they had. I understand that. But this is like really taking a scab off of a wound. And I'm sure there's a percentage of people who would never have thought about physician-assisted suicide or ending their life early who would do it because they just want to help their family members. That is so ghoulish and toxic. And it runs afoul of what medicine should be about. I don't have a problem with palliative care. That doesn't, you know, emotionally coerce somebody to make a decision that may be against them, against their moral judgment or their ethical judgment, or they may want to change their mind. What happens if there's a cure? Who knows? What the bottom line is, doctors shouldn't be making decisions about that. And I think from a Hippocratic Oath standpoint, committing euthanasia or pulling a plug on somebody is immoral and unethical. And most physicians, especially those of us who've taken the Hippocratic Oath, would never do that. And the fact that the government is trying to coerce, from a legal standpoint, a physician to do that is unconscionable. That's the line that we as physicians should say, we're done with the system. We're not going to do this anymore. Do what you want with your, you know, your extenders and your mid-levels, but we're removing our consent from this system. If everybody would do that in every aspect of our society, I think we could pull ourselves back from the brink that we're moving on this slippery slope down to hell, basically. And just because you may be against it, but you don't speak out, or someone else will handle it, or, you know, it'll work out, you know, God will work it out. No, it's on you. You know, you have choices. And if you're not making a decision or not speaking out is actually a choice. And, you know, we're all paying the price for people who may feel that this is going the wrong way, but they're going to stand back on the sidelines and work and let it work its way out. I can't do that. And I hope that my listeners and anybody who listens to this show would start getting into the mindset of, it's our turn now to take our power back and to stop this slide. There's nothing good. I mean, I'm listening to the Democratic convention, and it's this sweetness and light. Everything's awesome. The economy's great. Everybody's happy. It's just complete fabrication. And just because you say something is true doesn't make it so. And all of the negative posturing and, you know, I guess, you know, putting what you think onto somebody else, I forget the term for that, but basically the whole thing about if something happened but you're not happy about it coming out and it's someone else's fault, the question I have to ask is it true? In the Republican convention, it was mentioned that the unemployment rate among black youth is almost 60%, that the poverty rate amongst black people in America has skyrocketed, that the economy has left us behind. And it's not just black people, it's every working person in the world, in America. But it was painted as being negative. Well, the question is, are the statistics true? And if they are, how do we fix them? Just because you say it doesn't exist doesn't make it so. Any more than the email gate on the Democratic side, where there was some really hateful stuff spewed in those emails. Anti-gay, anti-black, anti-Latino. This is a party that's so inclusive, but there's anti-Jewish. This is a party that's so inclusive, but when you pull the lid back and you look at what they're saying and what they really think about people, it's disgusting. And their answer to this is, the Russians hacked us. Who cares who hacked who? Thank God for WikiLeaks. So the answer to the question actually should be, did it happen? Is it true? Obviously it is. You're seeing it in black and white. Collusion, corruption, distaste for their voting bloc. All you're good for in their, if you take them at their word on these emails, all you're good for is for voting for them. Everything else is just window dressing and identity politics and turning your brain off so that you can vote against your best interests. There's nothing good about someone giving you a handout because they can take it away. I don't want someone to give me something. I want to earn it, and I want to have power over me keeping that resource, a job, my education, etc. How the heck do you have free education? How does that work? That you have free education. What does that even mean? Who pays for that? And by definition, what colleges are going to get more money than others? Because, I mean, it's just, the whole thing makes no sense. If we continue to go down the path of identity politics and you owe me something, we're all going to end up with nothing. And it's really hypocritical for the 1%, and I'm talking about the Hillary Clinton and the rest of that ilk, they are the 1%, making millions of dollars, and then telling you that you should be unhappy because the 1% is taking it from you. And you're just sitting there going, yes. Like, I mean, I don't know if you didn't watch it, Dave, but just if you turn the sound off on these conventions, especially that one, and you look at the people's faces, it's like they're in a trance, they're crying, it's like their best friend just died, or they're enraptured because they won. It's like, you know, it's amazing. This is not you. She doesn't represent me. Her win does not, it affects me, unfortunately, God forbid. But I'm not in there like putting myself in her place and identifying with her. What is wrong with people? You're an individual. Hillary Clinton could care less whether or not you have food on your plate, whether or not any politician. They want to get elected. They want the power. They want to stay in power, and they want all the perks that come along with it, including money. And people should look at Clinton Cash, which is an excellent documentary. It's free online. And if you go to my Facebook page, I have a link to it. Whether or not you're voting for the Democrats or the Republicans, you need to know why you're voting for something. I'd rather vote for something than vote against something. And I can only vote for something if I understand it. I want to know what the motivation is. I want to know what the history is. They're trying to make you live in the past. Well, the past, there's a litany of things that you can look at in the past, and they're all corrupt. It's amazing. I happen to be independent. So I don't care, Republican, Democrat. I want to vote for the best person. And I'm going to vote my interests, which are, as a physician, I want to keep my job. I want to keep my profession. I actually get up and want to help people when I go to work. I don't want something standing in my way, forcing me into decisions that work against me, my moral and ethical compass, and my oath to take care of my patients. That's my motivation. Obamacare is the antithesis of that, and anybody or anything that's going to double down on it and expand it is a problem. That's my motivation. One of them, one of the major ones. And then there's other ones, which we'll talk about when we come back after the break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, again, looking at the past, and especially on Hillary Care, which nobody talks about because it was supposedly quashed and it never came into existence. If you look at the tenets of that, one, it was single payer. But not only was it single payer, it was a complete controlled and planned healthcare system where doctors were not allowed to be doctors, not allowed to be entrepreneurs. They were what they were allowed to make was to be mandated within the system. You couldn't take cash or out of pocket, you know, directly from the patient. It all had to be controlled by a grid where everybody entered the system, someone like the banking system now. Imagine that. Where your choices, your prices that you could charge patients were all planned, pre-planned for you. And that would have meant a mass exodus of good doctors out of the system. Well, Obamacare is actually Hillary Care. It's just rolled out more slowly. And the effect is the exact same thing. They didn't talk about public option. Well, now they're talking about public option. Controlled chaos. Problem, reaction, solution. You know, if once you destroy the private healthcare industry or the private insurance industry, then you have a lot of people who are not covered, incompletely covered, underinsured, paying tons of money, really upset about the system. The exchanges have all basically died off. We now have United, Cigna, and now Humana, who are exiting or have already exited the Obamacare exchange system. So what did they come up with? Now they're talking about public option, which is the slippery slope towards single payer. So I guess the government becomes the public option. Medicaid for all, which they've been trying to do from the get-go, which is a terrible system. I've talked about it on the show, Medicare at this point, but what it really means to the patient. The formulary for medications, horrible. We used to have to take somebody off of something that worked, put them on the Medicaid option of medicine so that it would be covered. Of course, it didn't work, or they'd have to take it twice as long for there to be any kind of effect. That's the kind of system we're talking about. And of course, once you get into this, end-of-life decisions and palliative care become the focal point. Because of that article that talks about the cost of right now they're down because people can't afford to access it, but as people are shoved into the system, then they're saying that down the road, medical costs, prices will go up because the population is aging. So they're setting this all up so that you get into the system, you get whatever minimal care that they're going to give you. I'm sure you're going to get a vaccine here or two or three. And when you get to be Medicare age, they're going to start pulling services from you and pushing you towards, you just want to do what's best for your family. You know what that means, if Vermont is any indication. And this becomes a system that's just a money suck hole, you know, draining money from you until you really need it. And then they just, you know, shove you out the door. If you really think about it and forget about, you owe me health care. Doctors should be at my beck and call. It's a right. If you get off that train of thinking and know this is where the train is driving, maybe you might have a second thought about this Obamacare system, government-based health care that they're trying to bring online, all to control the economy, all to tax you, mandate taxes from you, mandate money be taken out of your paycheck, and then you're on your own in terms of being able to access it. And if you are able to access it, we already know that the choices are limited because the insurance companies have decreased what they cover, what their benefits are. The fact that even when you do fall into the line or the silo of what they do cover, they find some way not to pay it. It's happening every day. Every physician out there, especially independent, who's watching their bottom line, can tell you a story about a service that they performed, that they got approval for from the insurance company, that after they did it, it was denied. I have to actually put a letter up on my website from one of the insurance companies that says exactly that. You cannot win in the system. This is what the letter said in generality. You're allowed to do this procedure for, you know, these codes, We allow you to do them. They are covered under our benefit guidelines. However, we will not tell you whether we'll pay for it until after you've done the procedure and you submit the charges. Who on earth would put themselves at that kind of, you know, unknown, that risk to do any kind of high ticket item, medically complicated item? You wouldn't do it. And of course, that's to the detriment of the patient. They're paying premiums for coverage. Their benefits say that it's covered, but there's this big black questionable hole about, well, we'll just decide after you've done it whether we're going to pay it. Oh, well. And then you're stuck, because if you sign a contract that states for a physician, if the insurance company doesn't cover it, the patient is not responsible for it, you've just bitten off more than you can possibly chew. And maybe you can't make payroll that month because you didn't get paid for procedures that you did. Or you can't pay your rent. Or you can't pay your malpractice insurance. That's the reality. It's not doctors driving around with Mercedes and 15 houses, etc., on TV. It's not like that at all. It's whether you can pay for the cost of doing business and actually have a decent quality of life without having to apologize for it. Why should anybody apologize for performing an honest day's work? If the athletes can get $70, $80, $100 million, nobody balks at it. They go and buy their tickets. But somebody who's sitting across from you, listening to your troubles, empathizing with you, and getting you better, but you're going to deny them and begrudge them getting paid for their services. There's something wrong with that picture. And part of it is the doctor's fault, because we didn't value ourselves enough to say we're not going to do this. I'm worthy. I'm not going to take this from an insurance company, and I'm not going to take it from a patient. And I'm going to work with people who want to work with me, who want to partner with me, who value my services. That's what doctors need to start saying, just like patients need to start saying the same thing. If you're seeing a doctor who doesn't walk into that office and look you in the eye, who doesn't touch you and examine you, who writes a prescription and walks out, and you're unhappy with the service, and you stay with that physician, you get what you get. I don't have any sympathy for you. Because if you don't value yourself, that you want a relationship with your doctor, that you don't want to be shoved out the door and just given a script, that you want to work through the problem and not just treat the symptom, but you just keep taking it, then it's on you. Because there's hundreds, thousands of doctors out there who won't do that. And if patients would make up their minds that they're worthy, that they're not going to put in the up with this and then pay through the nose for the privilege of getting shoddy care, frankly, then the system gets perpetuated. If you don't want your prescriptions called in, but you actually want to go and see the doctor, maybe you wouldn't be in this position where we have a growing antibiotic resistance, because people get antibiotics for viral infections. On the way in, I'm listening to a story about one-third of prescriptions written should never be written for antibiotics because they're not bacterial. But that's because there's no relationship between the doctor and the patient. That is the most cost-effective means of controlling our healthcare costs, getting better outcomes. It's not algorithms. It's not the government working along with the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies to make up treatment regimens that benefit the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies and the big pharmacy chains. That's not good healthcare. That's not making it cheap. It's you and your doctor saying, look, we have a relationship. I want to see you off this prescription medicine. You and I are going to work together to figure out how we can get you off of it, how we can prevent. I'm so tired of seeing these commercials where they talk about how awesome it is about the treatment options and for cancer. How can we never hear about how do you prevent it? It's a business, people, and they want you to be sick on a medication once a day or two or three or four, the more the merrier, once a day for the rest of your life to manage something. That's how the medical industrial complex works. And if you can't figure that out by now by listening to my show or any other medical show, I think, on on this station, then it's on you, and it's about personal responsibility. We're all going to fall off the wagon. You can eat crap if you want, but just know that if you do it every day and you don't think about what you put in your body, I mean, this is a long conversation. I'm sorry I'm a little off task, but it still comes down to personal responsibility and what you decide that you're no longer going to take. I'm not going to take the insurance companies telling me how to treat my patients. I'm done with it. And my goal, as soon as I can work through it, is to get rid of every single insurance company in my practice and deal with the patients directly. That's the method, and that's the way we keep healthcare powerful, efficient, cost-effective, and patient-centered. You have to realize you're a consumer, and if you just buy stuff without thinking about the bottom line, then you basically get ripped off, and that's what they're doing to us if we allow it. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
In 2011, Robin Koerner wrote the article that launched the biggest coalition for Ron Paul's presidential run, called Blue Republican. Now, Stairway Press is pleased to announce the publication of his first book, If You Can Keep It, Why We Nearly Lost It and How We Get It Back. Jeffrey Tucker, who wrote the foreword, says brilliant ideas come in effervescent packages. This is a good description of Robin Koerner's provocative work. It's a work of stunning erudition and sincerity. I also happen to agree with it. I've been struggling toward a similar thesis for a good part of my writing career, though I'm certain Robin has gone beyond even my most mature thought. His section on liberty as a realization of a civilization of love truly sweeps me away with its insight and depth. I know that time is short and that people don't read as carefully as they should, but this section deserves close study by every advocate of liberty. It will change the way you think and speak about the topic. We need this book now. Pre-order your personally signed copy of If You Can Keep It at ifyoucankeepit.us.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. This show was supposed to be about how Obamacare is dismantling our healthcare system, especially the one that's based in independent doctors being the front line of care, where it used to be. 55% of doctors used to be in private practice, small groups, running their own financial show, unencumbered and unhooked from the hospital system. And that's where patients could call up, come in the same day, the next day. It was efficient. There were no administrative fees tacked on to your bill. No sending you out to a consult where they're out of network, but they don't tell you, and then you get stuck with the out of network charge. Doctors were able to take you to surgeons, to freestanding outpatient surgery centers, again, unencumbered by hospital politics and ownership, where they could tell you what the price was of something, and it was a fraction, a quarter, a third of what the hospital charge was. That was the old days, where you wrote a prescription and you didn't have to send a patient to a pharmacy that was part of their network, or the formulary for this month was this particular medication that changed next month, so they'd have to put you on a different medication to keep you in formulary. I mean, these are all artificial hoops that people have unfortunately learned to jump through, and physicians have learned to jump through, which have gotten more. I mean, this is a game you can't win. If you play the game, you understand things, you put people on medicine that will cost them the least, and then the rug gets pulled. And now we're in a position where the independent doctor, the private practice, is dropped to about 30% of practicing physicians. That's a huge drop. Those physicians that no longer are in private practice have either left the profession, or they've become employed by hospitals, or they've sold their practice to hospitals. We've had, here in Atlanta, whole groups, urology groups, cardiology groups, that have sold their practice and become part of a hospital. And so now hospitals are specialized. They have centers of excellence, whatever they want to call it these days. And basically, you have to go there. You have to use those physicians. They have to use the guidelines of the hospital, the algorithms, and they get to charge for everything they do and tack on an administrative fee. We've talked, you know, my producer talked about getting going to a GI doctor, getting an exam that he didn't know that the person performing it was out of network, because he was sent by the doctor to the hospital that was in network. So this is hodgepodge mismatch or mashup of services where they don't tell you anything. You walk into an ER, the ER group may be outsourced, you know, a locum tenens group where they're outsourced. They're really contract laborers, but they're all outside your network, but you're in the hospital that's in your network. This is just a complete mess, and it's because of some entity deciding what some value to something is, instead of letting the market work. If you have the most excellent ER in the city, and the wait time is less than 30 minutes, you're going to make money on volume, because everybody's going to want to go to your hospital because it's the best. If everybody gets same old, everybody's the same, you know, you're going to pay $600 and up just to walk into any ER. Then they're going to give you what they give you. And in this day and age, that means good luck seeing a physician. Good luck seeing a specialist. Pay for the privilege of someone triaging you and telling you, here's a referral to a cardiologist, an ear, nose, and throat ophthalmologist as an outpatient. And they did nothing for you. Maybe they ordered a couple tests, maybe. But because of Obamacare and because of the now value-based services, they don't want, and the capitation, they don't want to order these tests anymore, because it comes off their bottom line, and they make their profit at the end of the year after they've given services or not, and they get the profit based on services they don't give. That's all coming off their bottom line to order a test to admit you for X number of days to put you in an ICU. That's coming off their bottom line, and it's all about money. Even if they tell you they're a nonprofit, those are the most profitable places I've ever seen, those nonprofits. And they can gouge you and still get a tax break at the end of the day. There is no common sense to this anymore, and it's become unwieldy, too big to fail, if you want to put it that way. But there's still an option, because we can decide, one, not to get sick, you know, make conscious choices so that you don't end up in this system at the mercy of these people. Because it's not going to be a good ending most of the time, especially if it's catastrophic. The other thing that people need to be aware of is that having to carry insurance puts you in a position where you don't have a choice of paying. It's coming out of your paycheck or your budget every month. But they're not all the same. Well, your choices aren't all the same. You can choose medical cost sharing. You can go into a system with direct primary care so that you're paying a monthly fee. It's considered necessary services. I believe it's a carve-out as well, so that you are actually in a medical home that is covered under the Affordable Care Act. It's not as it needs to have an adjunct that will cover you if you have to go to the hospital, if you have to be admitted somewhere. That's where it gets a little bit tricky, because you have to have a secondary supplemental plan in order to cover you in case. But overall, it's still cheaper than carrying one of these Obamacare plans or anything else, where it looks good with the low premiums until you need something, and then they sock you with co-insurances and deductibles that are crazy. I've seen individual plans up to $10,000, as I've said before. Medical cost sharing, to me, would be the best option, whether that's Liberty HealthShare, MediShare, Samaritan, your choice. Whatever you choose, though, you would be covered for hospitalization, for lab tests, for anything outside the doctor's office, including the doctor's office. So it's basically a one-off coverage where you don't have to think about it. I don't think about it anymore. I just know that I'm covered no matter what happens to me. Supplemental policies, again, like Aflac. I think MedMutual has, MetLife has one as well, where you can buy policies that will cover you for heart attack, stroke, cancer diagnoses. If you have routine care like a colonoscopy, that'll all be covered. You'll actually get a check, no questions asked, for whatever sum that you signed up for. In our case, for our office, $250,000 if we get one of these diagnoses. Coverage daily if we have to go to an ICU. Ambulance coverage. Coverage that doesn't necessarily happen when you have a private insurance plan. Again, they are becoming very stingy about what they cover. All they're doing is taking your money, and they're giving you the cover of saying, I'm covered so the government won't ding me with a fine. That's all they're managing to do these days. Quality health care delivery? Questionable. Affordable health care delivery? No. Absolutely not. So, if you haven't yet looked into the alternative models, then you should. If it doesn't work for you, so be it. If you have a catastrophic illness already, that's going to be difficult. But that's what the government should be covering. People who have, extraordinary needs. Not the average person, the young person who never goes to the doctor. I don't think they should be paying for somebody else. That's what the government, that small part of it is what the government should be paying for, but they've expanded what they want to take care of so they can control it and unfortunately mismanage it. And we see this. How Affordable Care Act got set up was on the backs of seniors by taking over $700 billion out of the Medicare fund, whether that's for the Part A, Part B. Basically, the seniors bankrolled this. And then they want to come back and tell you that Medicare is insolvent, we have to cut what we offer, it's going to cost seniors more, we have to have means testing, blah, blah, blah. All the things that they're doing now is because of what they did and have done in the past. And it's not right. And it's brought out the worst in us, that people can honestly say with a straight face, well, seniors should be happy with what they have, they've lived a long life. Now it's our turn, so we want what we want. That is the most, toxic way of looking at things. If you don't take care of the oldest among you and the youngest, then there's something wrong with your society. Now, they're getting rid of the unborn. They're moving towards putting seniors in a position where they have to decide whether they want to eat or take care of themselves, and then give them emotional blackmail about how they're sucking resources up so they should be happy to go. It's just sick. And those of us who have a problem with it need to make choices. I believe that this election is a choice. And if we want more of the same, if you want to double down on the mindset that the good of the many outweigh the needs of the few, that you need to take one for the team, then you're going to get more of this. But be aware that the team only exists for you. It doesn't exist for the people who write these laws. It doesn't exist for the people who pay to play. It only exists for you, the individual, the citizen, especially the ones that are the most vulnerable. While they tell you with their media campaign and propaganda how awesome it is and how bad you are for questioning it. Racist, sexist, want people to die, etc. It's ridiculous. And then to have people brought into the country who never paid into the system, who they want to bring in onto the Affordable Care Act, which is another cost but no pay in. What does that mean? I mean, how's that going to work out? Where you have thousands of people accessing the system without paying into it. Where's this money coming from? That's a good, you know, follow the money in these instances when they tell you you're going to get something free, we're going to take it from the 1%. I've read that if they confiscated the wealth of the 1%, it would not be enough to cover the programs for any length of time that they're trying to bring online, which should tell you that it's not about the 1%. It's about the rest of us. It's about the working class, working poor, whatever you want to put it. Those of us who have more than one job, those of us that are working overtime, that's where the money's coming from. And again, on my Facebook page, there's a link to one of the WikiLeaks emails that is a letter about the Clinton plan for the economy and all these taxes that they're going to try to raise. And on the break, let's take a break and come back, because I think it's an eye-opening experience to read exactly how this would affect everybody. And it's all about these taglines. They're taking from you, the 1% is this, we need to take it back and spread it around. Trust and believe, it's not being spread around, it's being taken from you, but they think you're too dumb to notice it. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, I have a link on my Facebook to a letter or to the email that talks about the proposed budget or economic plan for Clinton. And it was an eye-opening experience. I mean, all this talk about raising the taxes for on the 1%, and for her the 1% is anybody above or $250,000. Well, that's a two-person family working double jobs to make money, or a small business where that's considered to be taxable in this system. People who make above $5 million, again, a medium-sized business, they're talking about taxing you 70%. Why the hell would you want to work if you're getting taxed 70%? But not only those above $250,000, those below $250,000 are going to be taxed as well. I think it's a 5% or 6%. I think it's 5% tax across the board for everybody below $250,000. That doesn't sound to me like you're getting any wealth distribution. This money is being taken by the government. Where is that money going? And even if she wanted to use this for college for all and healthcare for all, free universal healthcare, etc., the system's untenable. There's not enough people working. Was it a third of our country is on some sort of public assistance? And although we're taking in immigrants, migrants, whatever you want to call these guys, by the droves, and you believe the mindset that they're mostly women and children, then those guys aren't going to be in the working realm for years, because if their children, it's going to take them a long time to grow up in order to become productive citizens. And that's another little carrot that people need to know about. It's not a majority women and children coming into our country. Take a peek at Europe. It's military-aged men, single men. That's what's coming into the country en masse, aside from the fact that over 90% are Muslim and a minority are Christian. So there's an agenda. That's a whole nother show. But stop listening to the The woe is me stories they try to put out there to guilt you so you just stop listening. Or you say, well, someone needs to take care. And they're playing on the goodness of our country, frankly, which is we do like to help people. And we do want to be a resource. But this is not what's really happening. They're trying to, and are, putting people who are not working age, onto Obamacare without having paid into the system. Social services, you mean, they're getting $6,000 a person to come in, from the Dreamer situation, $6,000 towards college, or getting a discount of being in state. These are perks. These are leg ups that American citizens don't get, and they cost us. And I don't have a problem with someone coming into the country legally. It's awesome. But this is not what's going on. And they're not even following the legal immigration system, but it's having an effect on every aspect of our society, specifically healthcare and the cost of it and access to it. And the system is already broken. They just messed it up further and are telling you, as they design a system that's designed to cement this. This is not a system, once it comes into place, that's going to be easily undone. This is a system that's affecting medical education, residencies, manpower for delivery of medical services. They're talking now about, another study came out, I think, a couple of weeks ago, about there's not going to be enough specialty doctors in the future, I think by 2025 or something. They're estimating a 97,000 doctor shortage. Well, how do you make up a doctor shortfall when it can take up to 10 years to train certain specialists? What they want everybody to be is primary care, deliver care based on what they're told to do. You won't have to have a lot of specialists because no one's going to pay for specialty care. If you need to have a cochlear implant, well, maybe you won't get it now. If you want to have a complex brain operation, well, the outcome's not so great, so we're not going to pay for it. This is a system that's being dumbed down, core curriculum medicine, where you've got people delivering the care, but without any thought involved, because you're too stupid to do it yourself. That's unacceptable. And that's the future of healthcare. Take what you get, pay for the privilege, two-tier system, and those that have the money are not going to be in this system. Those who write these laws, who think that's best for you, are not going to be in this system because they've carved out a niche for themselves, which is a step above. Good luck getting whatever Jimmy Carter got, because it's not going to happen. Does anybody really want to be in a system like that? Does everybody really think that that's fair? That where it's our turn and someone's looking out for us, do you really actually think that? Well, I don't know. I mean, you need to really take a step back and figure this one out. So this tax system, cigarette tax out, is going to go up. You know, anything that's a day-to-day tax will also go up in this system. But the take-home message was the debt would continue to explode. There was nothing in the tax plan that was designed to pay down the debt. So, hey, good luck with that. Once we are, you know, the debt to, I guess, is it debt to GDP ratio, Dave? I'm not sure my economics, but if your debt exceeds what you're bringing in, at some point there's no return because all of the interest is going to completely destroy the system. We're almost there, actually. Well, I think we're like 70% or 80% in terms of debt. It's something crazy. Once it gets above a certain number, you can't bring it back. And all these social programs, which really aren't social programs, they're programs of control. I can't even begin to explain to you what debt slavery is really like. You'll never come out from underneath it. You'll be working for somebody else for the rest of your life, and your children's life is winning, being part of the winning team. Having someone who looks like you in politics out there, is that worth it for the risk of this happening? That's a question that people need to start asking themselves. not the window dressing, you know, not the chants, not the name calling. None of that stuff really matters. It's about the bottom line and making, knowing what the decisions, the consequences of your decisions are. If you don't have a problem with them, if you can live with them, if you know them, hey, then you need to vote your, what you want, your conscience. But there's no excuse for saying I didn't know, or they lied to me. I don't trust anybody. I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat. I've gone and looked at what their platforms are, what their life experience is, what choices they've made. You can't tell what's going to happen in the future, but you can certainly tell something about what someone's like by how they've operated in the past. And we have two candidates who we have a lot of information on. Some of it on one side is not that good. You know, the track record is not good at all. And it's one of those examples of failing upward, of being in the right position, using, you know, legacy, using, alliances to get what you, to get where you are. Do you honestly think that's going to change in this system? We're already seeing that the freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom to associate is being taken away daily in the country. I don't believe that's going to get better unless we decide we're done with it and we're not going to live in fear. And I don't subscribe to reality as negative. You have to know what the problem is so you can make a conscious choice. By saying that there is no problem puts you on the pathway to some place you don't want to be. That's pretty clear. I don't care what it is. It's like having a medical condition. You don't want to go to the doctor. You think it's going to take care of yourself. You're afraid to go. And when you finally break down, it's gotten so advanced you can't do anything about it. It's the same principle with this country and with the choices that we need to make. Whatever choice you choose, at least know why you're choosing it. And it shouldn't be because she looks like me. It's the other candidate's racist, sexist, homophobic because they said so. I don't have any, you know, illusion that politics is probably one of the most dirty things you could possibly enter. I don't have an illusion about that. But I do believe that we have power and we should exert it over these candidates. And if we don't, then it's on us. We know that one side of this, at least from what I'm seeing, and I really recommend that you see Clinton Cash and that you see Hillary's America. I don't care if you're a Republican or Democrat, you should independent, you should see it because it gives you a synopsis of where we've come from, not what they tell you, but what historically what is. I had no idea the Democratic Party was as bad historically as it was. I really didn't. And it was an eye-opening experience, and it really helps me understand why it's all about divide and conquer. It's about identity politics. It's about carving people up into little factions and then having them snipe at each other so they can get a crumb. It's the ultimate crab in the bucket. And as they control the narrative and demonize the competition and paint themselves as the saviors, they're actually doing the opposite, which is putting us in a position where we'll be beholden to the government, we'll be taking a handout. They actually have not the good Democrats, but there is UN has a policy that they want to give everybody a certain amount of money as a baseline. Sweden, I think, is doing this. That is the last thing you want, is a handout from anybody, because when they pull that hand away and you're on your knees begging, then they have you. I highly recommend you see these two movies. I highly recommend you get the WikiLeaks and you read them so you can figure out what someone is doing, not what they say, but what they're doing. Read Donald Trump's planks. Forget the Democratic and Republican Party. Look at the individual instead of the Crips and the Bloods and picking sides. Vote for your benefit. Vote for your family. And on that note, thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.